reading a book, Rashi. It's called The Chitlin Circuit.
Is it a recipe book?
No, it's...
Southern recipes?
You'd think so, the title called Chitlin.
How to make your hair high and smoke while you cook things?
Actually, that'd be a very cool book. And there is a picture of an old barbecue place on the front. But no, it's a book about the origins of rock and roll. It's
pretty
good.
That is far less interesting than what I proposed. You know what I think, Dad?
What?
I think we should judge books by their covers. I think we should just decide what they're about and not read them.
But if we don't read books and we don't get any intelligence, then we just...
And then writers don't get any money. Nobody around here eats. Dad, yeah. You're so firm. Such a disciplinarian. I admire and respect you.
Well, it's a writer's craft, Rashi.
Dad, can I have that book? I need to start a fire.
Sure, here you go. Wait, no! Hi, this is Paul Dini.
And this is Misty with... Misty Wee? Misty Wee? Misty Wee? Are you kidding me with this right now?
Fantastic.
What happened to me?
You had a breakdown all
Misty
of a sudden.
Misty Wee?
It's been weeks since we've had a podcast and I have forgotten my name.
You forgotten your name. So now are you small, little tiny Misty?
I am Misty Wee, yes.
Misty Wee.
Very small. But now I am 1 inch high.
You're good.
Yes.
Like teeny weeny Paul Dini.
Yes.
There you go.
When did that... happen. I've never heard that before.
Oh, I had an adventure with Ray Palmer once, and we...
Who's got Ray Palmer?
The Atom. We shrank each other.
And that was your superhero name, was Teeny Weeny Paul Dini?
Well, yeah, I mean, it you know, he was the Atom, and I was Teeny Weeny Paul Dini.
Probably you shouldn't tell people that story.
Yeah, it was left behind when DC went to the New 52.
Thank God.
And kind of wisely
small
so.
Small favors.
Yes.
Teeny Weeny Paul Dini. Let's wipe that one from the zeitgeist.
Yes.
Gross. Nobody wants that. So, what do you got there?
Book called The Chitlin Circuit and The Road to Rock and Roll. Rashi tried to burn it.
Well, that's what he does. Have you read it?
No, I just picked it up. I started thumbing through it. It looks really interesting. It's an account of the early days of rock and roll.
That's that book Max Maven recommended we give to Eddie.
Yeah, that's right.
Mm-hmm.
So, Eddie, if you're listening, you're getting a present. I actually looked through it really quickly to make sure that he was not listed in the index or did one of the blurbs up front, because... There's something worse than handing a book to somebody, you know, as a gift. And it's like, yeah, I wrote the intro to that.
Have you ever done that?
No, but there have been times. Like, there was one time I got some records once, and I got a record by Sleepy LaBeouf, who's one of my favorite rockabilly
Does
guys.
Does he spell his last name Beef, like French Beef?
Or yeah. Like Shia LaBeouf.
No, it's like Sleepy LaBeouf.
B-E-E-F?
Right. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, so there's no pretense at all. He's La Beef.
La Beef.
You know what? That's the way it should be smoked.
He's
that beef bullshit is just nonsense.
He's kind of like a humanoid version of the bear that would come out and sing last at Country Bear Jamboree, you know, the big guy. Sleepy's been on the road for years, and I first saw him singing it in Massachusetts years ago. He'd sing at clubs up there, and I got one of his records, and I was sitting there reading the liner notes, and I'm digging hearing Sleepy, because I kind of you know, catch up with him every so often, and I was reading the liner notes, and the guy was talking also about seeing Sleepy play at a club in Inman Square in like the early 80s, and I'm going, God, I did that, boy, yeah. This guy and I have the same experience. And I flash to the end of the liner notes, Eddie Gordetsky wrote it. So he does that a lot.
Wow.
But anyway, if he's got this book, then he'll probably say, yeah, I got that. Or else if he doesn't, he'll enjoy it.
Yes.
Every once in a while, I can surprise him with stuff.
You're very good at that. And he surprises you. He got something cool for your birthday.
Yes, he did.
What did he get you?
He got.
I know what he got you, but tell them at home what he got.
A birdhouse.
A birdhouse.
A birdhouse made like in the style of a classic vintage trailer.
Airstream trailer.
Oh,
yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
It's pretty excellent.
That
Except
awesome.
Here's what's not excellent. It's metal. And we live in California, where the sun is really
it's
hot.
Bake those birds.
It's a birdie oven. That's exactly what I told Paul.
It's easy bake for tiny chickens.
We cannot use this outside. Because he was like, oh, let's put it outside. I said, no. And he said, why?
Only if you have annoying birds out.
Yeah, but you don't know who's annoying and who's not.
Oh,
the
true.
Nice bird could get cooked, and the a-hole bird is fine.
Mm. So we have to hang it in the shade if we put it up there. We could hang it in the
hang
barn,
it in the
but
shade
then
it's not going to stop when it's 140.
We don't want rats to get in there. So I'm just going to put it in my office. And put
well,
it
and you have already started a modification.
Well, I've retrofitted it as a home for a screwball squirrel.
Nice.
I have a screwy squirrel figure, and I just put him inside, and I'm gonna put a little TV and a little a little diorama in there for, you know, him. This is like where he lives now that he's in retirement from cartoons. And
mm-hmm. yeah, I put all my money and I bought this trailer and yell at the kids when they come by my tree and I piss on them as they come by. I throw acorns at them and then I piss on them. It's good to be a retired cartoon character.
I can't believe you just had him say piss.
What, Screwy?
Yeah.
Have you ever watched one of his cartoons? He's not far from saying stuff like that. He's crass. He's crass, yeah, but he's great. I love Screwball Squirrel. Anyway, so it's I made it a little retirement home for him.
Very nice.
Yeah.
So what have you been up to, sir?
Oh, work, hulking. It's been a while.
Last time you were here, you had Spike and Tony.
Yes.
And I have no idea what you talked about because I was in the other room doing something stupid. I don't even know what I was working on. But I was working on something. And I'm sure it wasn't stupid, whoever I was working for and with.
Had I gone to San Francisco at that time?
Nope. So I'm going to let you do that. I have to make a very quick phone call to the logo guy.
Okay.
So I'm going to... Guys, I'm working on a logo for MistyLee.com. So if you have a pitch, I'm taking pitches right now. That's the last thing that they showed me looked like it was for rice. What?
I said right this second, so call her.
Yeah, I mean, don't call me. I don't want them to have my number. But anyway, so I'm going to move this. And you can tell them about your San Francisco trip. I'll be back in 5.
Okay. Yeah, so I went up to San Francisco with my pal Henry Gilroy. And...
Oh, actually, I think we did talk about that already.
Really?
Yeah.
Man, we haven't been on the air in a while. We've been having some trouble with our... I don't know what we've been having trouble with, but we recorded a few of these, and I thought I had actually talked about that before. I guess now that I have. So, okay, you probably heard about the San Francisco trip last week, if we are in fact up and running this week, and I think we will be.
Yeah.
So, worked out the technical gonks?
We just have some last few things to make sure what's going on with it, and I think we can be back up and running by this weekend.
Oh, great, great. Mm-hmm. You know, that occasionally you run into that when you do these podcasts, and that is just, you know, unforeseen trouble. A lot of people have tweeted me and said, hey, where are the podcasts, or are you done with those? And the answer to both is no. Actually, the answer to both of those can't be no, because one has nothing to do with the other. No, we're not done with podcasts, and what happened to them, you just heard what's happened to them.
Yes. So, thanks all our loyal listeners for sticking around and waiting for us to come back. We really appreciate it.
We think the world of both you guys, so yes. You know, without you, we're really nothing. And we will be back in full force by the time you hear this. So what's been happening since then? Gosh, I can't really, don't really know. We got the house all decorated for Halloween. It looks like a Hallmark store exploded in here, actually. We have every possible Halloween tchotchke you can imagine.
Yeah, I pulled up and I saw all the fall stuff, and I didn't think it was quite Halloween stuff yet. I thought you were easing into it. And then I came in here, and it's full-blown Halloween.
It's full-blown Halloween, but then again, to some degree, it always is. And... we have a lot of stuff up. We have it doesn't look quite Hallmarky. It looks kind of old fashioned and very vintagey, and that's kind of like what I like about Halloween decorations, that it has sort of like an old fashioned, old style, early America Halloween look to it. Halloween's kind of all over the place. I mean, I like the classic imagery of, you know, the owls and the pumpkins and the black cats and everything. And then it has all the new stuff, like I guess all the new stuff would be more like slasher stuff, like crawl. What was that?
I don't know.
Was that Muggsy?
No, they're both in here.
No, there's Muggsy.
Muggsy, are you howling in your sleep? What are you doing over there, bud?
Didn't even think it came from him. He looked awake. That was strange. There's a strange. You could probably hear it on the podcast. A strange little animal noise in the background.
Yeah. But Deuce and Muggsy, let's see, wasn't Hobart, wasn't Rashy.
No.
I guess there's something, some weird animal outside. I don't know. But, we're looking down the barrel at another Halloween.
Yeah, I mean, there is slasher stuff, but, I mean, even you have the Nightmare Before Christmas-ish stuff, and there's a lot more newer Disney and kid-friendly Halloween tchotchkes around.
Yeah. When it gets just to guys wielding axes, you know, toward a screaming teenager's head, then it's... I don't know. It kind of loses a little bit of the magic for me. But because Halloween is, to me, a little more fun than it is just a celebration of, you know, severed arms and spurting blood and zombies feasting, although the zombies are kind of fun. I got in the early holiday mood yesterday, or Halloween mood, I guess. I had a Dr. Fibes-a-thon. I watched both Dr. Fibes movies over the weekend, and those are pretty lousy, but they're a lot of fun.
I'm not familiar with those. What are they?
Dr. Fibes was a series of two movies made in England in the early 70s, and they starred Vincent Price, and he played a really terrific character called the Abominable Dr. Fibes, and he was a doctor and a organist and a kind of a mad. He was a genius, and mm-hmm. I guess the movies are set around 1925 or so. And they're about a group of people who are killed in mysterious ways, and it's traced back to this character, Dr. Fibes, who entrusted his wife to a group of surgeons, and then she died on the operating table, and so as he was rushing to her side, he was in an auto accident and horribly burned. So he has come back from the grave to punish those who have robbed him of his wife, and he still has his wife's dead body and hauls it around with him everywhere.
Wow.
Like Mr. Freeze, you know. Actually, I don't know how much of that I remembered when I was a kid and put into that, but Bruce Timm at one point reminded me, you know, like, hey, this is a little like Dr. Fibes, and I actually had to sit down and watch the movie after we had were animating the Mr. Freeze episode, and I go, oh yeah, this guy, you know, haul, you know, mourning his lost wife. But then again, that's such a big part of horror and romantic fiction. I mean, that's in Edgar Allan Poe. It's in a lot of things. The idea of being separated from the one you love the most.
Psycho even has the mother.
But Vincent Price, I love Vincent Price. He's a terrific actor, and his movies aren't really all that scary, but he just takes such delicious pleasure in being the villain, or in some of them being the victim.
He's mastered being sinister.
Yes. And Dr. Fibes, in the movie, it's sort of interesting. He never actually speaks. His voice is dubbed over his action. The idea is that Fibes is so badly maimed in the car accident that his head is burned into like this. When you see him in his natural form, he has like this crispy looking skull, and he can't talk. So he puts makeup on over his face and a wig, so he looks like Vincent Price. But when you see him, it's Vincent Price with, you know, it looks like he's got bad makeup on. But the reason is he's covering up his skull head, and he talks through a sort of like a Frankenstein-like bolt that kind of screws into his neck, and then it comes out a speaker. So he is able to speak, although his mouth never moves. And I think he eats and drinks by putting things behind his... At one point, like, you see him drinking, and he's pouring it in the side of his head. So I guess a hole in the mask or the prosthetic that he's put on.
That sounds fascinating.
Yes, and even though his wife is sort of like hovers between life and death, he's got another girl named Volnavia who assists him. A silent woman, you know, my dear Volnavia, you must assist me in my revenge. And Volnavia is sort of like a woman who looks like a 1970s model and dresses like that, even though the movies are ostensibly in the 20s. And there's a certain delight in these kind of serial killer movies, and Price was... They're serial killers with a theme on them. And Dr. Fibes is like that. And so is another movie I like called Theater of Blood, where there's a set number of victims who have all wronged the hero in some... The tragic hero, now villain in some way. Mm-hmm. And it's a countdown built along very specific themes. Hmm. So in Dr. Fibes, he kills the, I believe, nine doctors... Nine or ten, as according to the plagues of Egypt, you know, the plagues of the Pharaoh, and so one guy is ripped apart by bats. Another one is stung to death, so who dies of boils. Another one is at a costume party, he's given a frog mask that tightens itself repeatedly until it cuts into his skin and he both smothers and bleeds to death at the same time. So that's the plague of frogs. Another guy is impaled by a unicorn, which is really cool. which is the plague of beasts. And like that. So it's like, once you get a theme, then you can just go to town on it. The same way with Theater of Blood. Vincent Price plays a Shakespearean actor who is kind of out of touch with the current theater, and he does these great hammy Shakespearean roles, and the modern day critics all revile him. So he feels they've cheated him out of an acting prize. So he commits suicide in front of them. They think he's gone forever, but then of course he comes back, and then he kills each one according to a death in one of the Shakespeare's plays that he was in.
I'm going to take this chance to needlessly promote my own movie, You Can't Kill Stephen King. In it, Stephen King kills all of his victims in a method of his own books.
Really?
Yeah.
Did you write this?
No, I did the sound for it.
Oh, when's it coming out?
We're still looking for a final U.S. distribution, but we got distribution in Japan.
Wow, cool. Yeah. Did you get approval of Stephen King?
He's aware of it, and he acknowledges it, and even has mentioned it on his website a couple times.
He's
supposed to come see the screening, but I don't know if he ever did, because it was in Maine.
Ah. But the screening was in Maine, or he was in Maine?
Yeah, well, the screening was... the first viewing of it was at the Laugh Film Festival up in Laughlin, I think it was... Auburn, Maine.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and we've been in a number of festivals since then. We went to Cannes with it, and we have a distributor to help us sell it, and yeah, can't wait.
Does he appear in it as a character?
Yes, but you never actually see him dead on. It's at the back of his head or like shadow.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Oh, it sounds like fun.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun to work on.
What are the stories that you kill people the manner of?
I think I want to keep that all as a surprise. And there's so many Easter eggs and little nods and gestures to all of his movies. We even found a way to get like the Shining theme in there because that's public domain.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Oh, wow.
So, yeah, I'll let everyone know when it comes out.
Very cool. Actually, I think one of my favorite modern day horror movies just came out on DVD this week, and that's Cabin in the Woods.
Oh, I love that movie.
That was fun.
Yeah.
I think you're going to see a rise in... Actually, since Cabin in the Woods, I've heard of at least one other sinister unicorn movie being announced. Like, somebody's doing a horror unicorn.
Nice.
And
not to spoil it, it's been long enough, but yeah, that was one of my favorite parts in the movie.
Oh, you can't, you know, you can't win against a berserk unicorn. Yeah. I mean, I just think that's pretty great. And I like that movie a lot. And it didn't perform well, and I don't know why, but or as well as they hoped, but hopefully...
It's a hard movie to sell without giving it away.
Yeah.
So, when it, you know, you think it's just a normal horror movie, but you go in and it's something completely different.
Although you can say that whatever you think is menacing these kids in the woods, you're right.
Yes, exactly.
You're right. Or you would have been right had you... But it doesn't matter because at the end, you know, you're right. You want to see aliens? You see aliens. You want to see giant snakes? They're giant snakes. Hillbillies, everything. The works. Good stuff. So what are you guys going for us for Halloween? Have you thought about your costumes?
I'm still leaning towards Starburns from Community.
Okay.
Complete with the Starburns and the bearded dragon on my shoulder.
All right. You know, you can get those at like Renaissance fairs, you know.
The Starburns or the bearded dragons?
Well, was it an actual dragon? Was it a lizard?
It was a little lizard, yeah.
Oh, okay. All right.
Own one, so.
Oh, okay. I went to a Renaissance fair, and they actually had dragons that you could put on your shoulder. They're toys, and they have, like, these squeeze bulbs. And so you walk around with them, and you hold the squeeze bulb, you know, when you're in your wizard robe or someplace. And you squeeze it, and then the dragon moves his head around or flaps his wings or something. Nice. And last time I went to a Ren fair, there was just selling racks and racks of these dragons. So you could have them. So you could be a wizard and have your
own pet dragon. Or you could be Kitty Pryde.
Or that too, I expect. Yeah. Emily, do you know what you're going to do for Halloween?
I'm still toying with some ideas. I have a cloak, and I'm trying to think of characters with cloaks besides random Harry Potter characters.
Well, Zorro.
Oh, Zorro.
That's not bad.
Uh-huh. I mean, is it a full-on cape or is it just a cloak?
It's a cloak with the hood.
Okay.
It too.
Well, there's Zorro, there's the Grim Reaper, there's...
I was thinking of Destiny from the Sandman series.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Doesn't he have a book chained to his arm or something like that?
Yeah, I got a couple of the Sandman Absolutes. She could just use one of those.
Oh, yeah.
They're designed like the Books of Destiny, too.
Oh, yeah. That'd be very cool, yeah. Lots of Sandman influence out there around Halloween time.
You have any inspiring costumes that you'll change at the last minute yet?
I don't know. I haven't really thought about it. It's I thought about Blackbeard because I've always considered him a great role model. and my beard is almost grown out to where I could pull that off again.
Yeah.
Then I have to keep the whole pirate thing going all night. You know,
would it be original Blackbeard or Disney Blackbeard?
Well, there are two Disney Blackbeards.
Oh, that's true.
The one in the Jack Sparrow movies.
Mm-hmm.
The Pirates of the Caribbean. And then there's
Blackbeard's ghost.
Blackbeard's ghost, who is... I like that character. Yeah. I love that version of Blackbeard. The Peter Ustinov version?
Yeah, that's my favorite.
I actually watched that recently. I tried to. I had it. My DVD skipped all over the place. It was kind of a crummy copy. But there are times I'm looking at Peter Ustinov, and he does these gestures and these mannerisms and, you know, or the way he looks around or processes something... And I swear to God, Johnny Depp's watched that movie.
Yeah.
You know, I figure he must have sat down, watched Blackbeard's Ghost with his kids, or remembered it from when he was a kid, because he and I are about the same age. I'm a few years older. But he, you know, Peter Ustinov plays a very charismatic pirate. And there are times, even though they look nothing alike, I can kind of see a little bit of the same thought process that Peter Ustinov is using, or some of that waggish good humor that Johnny Depp has applied in there. Maybe it's my imagination, but I think, you know, it's closer to Peter Ustinov than it is to
Keith Richards.
Well, not so much that, but Disney's other great pirate, which is Robert Newton in Treasure Island.
Yeah.
You know, that set the pirate, you know, for all. Nobody talked like pirates before him. It was him doing that. Arr, matey. Arr, Jim lad. You got the world of Long John Silver for sure. You know, no pirates didn't talk like that. They were just grumbly guys. And then he came along and suddenly, okay, the pirates sound like that, you know, and defined them forevermore. So, but that's a good pirate too. Pirates are good. We've kind of thinking about a unicorn theme for Halloween.
Nice.
But then again, you know, unicorns, they tend to go kind of froofy, you know?
Yeah, that's true. It's hard to make them scary, but it'd be fun to try.
Well, you know, it's scary. I mean, anything lowered with its head down coming toward you with spikes, whether it's one, you know, it could be anything from an elephant with its tusks to a you know, a reindeer, it's pretty damn scary.
That's true.
So a unit, but there's something about that one, you know, spiral horn that just, you know you're gonna get it, you know, with the freaking unicorn. So I guess it can be scary, but kids always unicorns are pretty. Unicorns are lovely. So. Yeah. I don't know. I'd have to go dark, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know. I've looked at a few costumes online and in the stores, and I always go for the big, all-encompassing monster or beast costume.
Yeah.
And Missy says, don't do that. Don't get dressed up as some sort of animal. One, you're going to scare the dogs, and they'll just attack you because they always attack strange animals.
Yeah.
Or two, you're going to be too hot in there and then run around without the hat on, And then you won't have any costume. It's like, yeah, but I'll put it on, you know, if somebody wants a picture. It's like, no, it's not the same thing. Get something where your face is exposed and people can actually see you. It's like, I don't want people to see me. I want to hide. I want to observe them being silly. So You know, I think I would like to do a large, all-encompassing costume that I can make an appearance in and tell everybody, "Oh, it's me inside this giant head. Have a good time. Happy Halloween." And then I'll sneak out of the back of whatever the suit is and then prop it up somewhere and then just observe people. And then I'll just come in wearing sunglasses and just stay toward the back of the room and watch everybody else's reaction.
That could be fun.
Yeah. Yeah, we went over to Halloween Town in Burbank, which is our number one source for Halloween merriment.
Yeah, it's a good store.
Yeah, I love that store. You walk in and it's jet black inside. And one side is nothing but bodies. Nothing yeah. but body parts, hanging bodies, corpse brides, executioners, severed limbs, zombies, werewolves, ghosts, you know, things crawling out of the ground, you know, stuff like that. And, you know, pretty intense. And the other half is they have an art gallery in the back, which is really cool. And they have books and models, monster models and dolls and toys. If you want a monster toy, that's where they get them. Old DVDs and then books that are really about everything from the kind of go from horror into kind of popular culture into kind of tattoo culture to road culture. You know, I actually went there recently to, I was doing a lot of research on a roadside amusement park story, and I've got a lot of books there about old roadside amusement parks, Mother Goose Lands, Santa's oh, yeah. Village, reptile farms, stuff like that.
Nice.
That's a good place. That's my source for books like that. And then down the street is the costume store, which is just goes on for acres. I mean, if you, no matter what you want to be or what you fantasize about becoming, you can be it at that store. They have costumes for literally everything. And if you can't, and if you somehow come up with something more exotic or more bizarre that they don't have, I think you can buy the raw materials there to take it yeah. home. And if you're any hand with a glue gun or spray paint, you can, you know, retrofit it so you can become the creature slash monster slash army man slash glamour girl of your dreams. So it's all there.
Also, like, it's a wrap just down the way too. It's a store for production companies and shows closing. They send yeah. the wardrobe there.
Mm-hmm. A lot of places in LA get, you know, vintage stores get their clothes from movie productions, mm-hmm. and you can go in and get a dress or a coat that was worn by somebody that you might even know from TV.
Yeah.
And hey, boy, last week when so and so wore this coat on House, I could buy the same coat. Here it is, you know. Yeah. And one time I was in there, it was around Halloween time, and I was looking for some inspiration, and they had about 20 identical swallowtail purple suits.
Wow.
They were kind of a light purple, but you could have outfitted an army of Jokers in this, and in different sizes. Like, they went up, you know, big size, you know, bigger than I am now, to tiny little size. And I don't know what it was for, if it was for some dance routine or some skit or something, but you could have gone in and, you know, for a very reasonable price, bought yourself a do-it-yourself Joker costume. All you need is, like, you know, trick it out at home with, I don't know, like a green shirt and a yellow vest or whatever it is he wears. It's just the classic, you know, Joker look, and then the appropriate, you know, makeup and headgear on the face and stuff like that. But you can get good deals there. And,
yeah.
And actually, now is a terrific time to go to Burbank and walk up and down Magnolia, isn't it?
Yeah.
Right through town, right through the vintage and resale shops. Everybody is out there, like from the second week of September through the last panic night before Halloween. Everybody's out there buying stuff, vintage clothes or rock yeah. and roll stuff.
Yeah, that
or
week
whatever.
Before Halloween, there's lines out the doors for all the stores. They have to take a number to get in.
Yeah,
it's insane.
It's like, you were looking for yellow go-go boots. Why didn't you come earlier? You know,
yeah.
you knew you were going to be a hippie, so or better yet, you could have ordered them online and. But yeah, it's pretty astonishing.
I was watching Four for Texas today, and
great picture.
Yeah, and talking about those closet and costume accoutrements, I saw Dean Martin carrying around a carpet bag throughout the picture.
Really?
And I just was fascinated by them. I don't see them anymore. I haven't seen them in years, but I want one so bad now.
Classic carpet bag.
Yeah, yeah. It's and I don't even know if that's actually how they're just carpets that they sew together with a handle, right?
Well, they would have some sort of like mechanism in the front, like a wire or a metal thing, and then you'd open it like that, like Mary Poppins, you know.
Yeah,
it's a big advocate of the carpet bag, and they were very popular. They gained popularity in a negative way after the Civil War with the term carpet bagging, because I guess what happened was a lot of during the Reconstruction of the South, a lot of Northerners swooped down to the South to either purchase land or, I don't know, take advantage of the confusion after the war. And so they were called carpetbaggers because they all had these distinctive carpet bags. For some reason, I think the statement is, the name is a little more political. Like maybe they came in and tried to seize power or control in areas where they were still trying to, you know, reconstruct the South. But carpet bagging did have being a carpet bagger was a term of derision way back when.
Anything in there, they're amazing.
Well, that was it took, you know, 100 years later, Mary Poppins finally cleaned up the carpet bag, because she not only did she fly around on her little enchanted umbrella, she also had a magical carpet bag, and she could take anything out of it. Yep. As she demonstrated in the movie, she was able to take, you know, a hat rack and a mirror and whatever else she wanted to put in there. I guess her carpet bag, you know, has some sort of like weird spatial trans-dimensional properties.
Her carpet bag is a TARDIS.
Yes. Along with any good magician's hat. You know, yes. They can just, the hat is merely a gateway to other realms. But I don't know. The carpet bag is, I don't see them as much anymore. I'm sure I must have seen some at a luggage carousel.
Yeah, I don't think I can even recall a time I've seen one other than a movie.
Hmm. Now, I have a canvas, a yellow canvas and brown leather writer's satchel that I take with me to meetings.
Yeah, those are nice.
And it has my initials embroidered on it. And today I went to a meeting over in Beverly Hills, and the assistant who showed me into the office of the person I was meeting with said, "I've never seen an old bag like that. You know, it's you never see those." And I go, "Really? Well, like, you know, Misty bought this for me online about 3 years ago, brand new. You can get them brand new, but it's just, you know, whatever you're used to or comfortable with seeing." So I have no doubt. Actually, I looked at a carpet bag for Misty not long ago because I felt it fit in very well with her image, and thought that she could use the carpet bag as not only, you know, for travel, but also to transport things to and fro from the Magic Castle. But she kind of looked at it and said, "Oh, I don't want that."
You know, steamer trunks also. I think there needs to be more of those.
Yes, the classic old style steamer trunks.
Yeah, the ones you can fit three people in, like the Marx Brothers.
Of course. Yeah.
Yeah, because you can like hang up wardrobe, and there's drawers in there, and there's space for anything.
Yeah, Harpo Marx. Yeah. Yeah, that was a great scene, the stateroom scene in A Night at the Opera.
And two hard-boiled eggs.
And two hard-boiled
eggs. Three hard-boiled eggs.
Yes.
I would like a sack with the dollar sign on it. Like the canvas one, not like a
money bag.
One.
Oh, the old classic money bags?
Yeah.
Like what burglars used to steal.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. They didn't know what to steal before those existed.
Yeah. I guess I still have the canvas money bags. I've seen them being moved in and out of Brinks armored cars, but they just don't have the old dollar sign on them.
Yeah, they need the dollar sign.
Yeah, it's like what Uncle Scrooge uses to prop open doors inside his money bin. And the Beagle Boys, you always see them carrying these perfectly round bags of money out, you know. And,
And those bags always seem to be malleable with how much money were in them. Like, they start off small, and the more money you put in, the bigger the bag got.
Sure. It didn't really disturb the weight, though. You know, if it's like you're actually carrying a heavy bag of coins, you're not going to get very far. But I guess if it was just a sack of green money, then you can carry that along very comfortably, like a pillow or something.
Yeah.
That's the way to get rich. Just steal a few of those things.
There you go.
Hi, everybody. I'm back. I just got off the logo call, and I think this is going to be really cool.
Oh, yeah?
I'm working with a company on the East Coast, and they are just spectacular. And this, my point of contact, his name is Mike, and he's just a super nice guy. And I'm really looking forward to seeing what they come up with.
That's cool.
Yeah,
that's
you kind cool. of figure out who you are and what you're selling. And, yeah, I'm just excited to finally have a logo, which I've wanted for so long.
Is it going to be just an image, or is it going to include your name?
Well, it depends on what they come up with.
Oh, okay, you know, so like they've sent tons free range of things. Uh-huh. What to do?
I've seen a couple drafts. I've seen some that are like Disney, the handwritten Misty mm-hmm. Lee. I've seen MLs. I saw one that I said looked like cheerleading camp, which was an ML with my hand way up and sparkles, and I was like, jazz hand and sparkles? This no. But I'm really excited.
Good.
I think it's going to be great. Yeah, we're honing and refining some branding stuff. And, you know, it's nice when all these years I didn't know who I was. And Eddie Gorodetsky, who we got the book for, actually said, go take improv. Because you're going to have a couple go-tos that you don't really realize you are. And you're going to kind of find out what your essence is. And I went and took improv and went, oh, I'm mentally ill. And I'm kind of mischievous and a little bit sassy. And I'm not doing any of those on stage.
Hmm.
Oh. And so in the past, I would say 5 or 6 months, stuff has really started changing.
Oh.
And I'm like, and you know, like the seance stuff came in mm-hmm. and all the mental illness. I mean, I'm sitting here in a dress right now with teeth and bones and brains all over it. And it is September. There is no reason. And I would wear this in March. So there's no reason other than the fact that I am a sick person. And so this logo guy keeps pulling me back. He's like, not too sick, not too creepy, not too crazy. Come on, come on, come on. You know, but he's the logo guy. I mean, he did the logo for the Kardashians for their perfume. He works with Justin Bieber. He's painting a guitar for Jason Mraz right now. I mean, like, this is what he does.
Nice.
Yeah, and he's not expensive. He's just good.
Very good.
So, yeah.
I like your dress.
I like your dress.
I'm not wearing a dress.
I like that even better.
I'm wearing clothes, but I'm just not happening to be wearing a dress.
Oh, you are no fun.
Well, I like your
dress. It's audio. You could be wearing a froofy unicorn dress.
I'm wearing a sundress.
And he looks lovely.
I'm wearing a ball gown and tiara. There, are you happy?
That's much better.
There we go.
Yeah. Can you give me this what I show to the judges?
This is what I show to the judges.
That was terrible.
Give me some secret juice.
Special juice is going to help me with.
Oh, you like that little kid.
How dare you get it wrong.
This is me, man. Come on.
Yeah. Well, that's right.
You're so cross.
No, I'm not cross.
I left the room and you got cross and boring.
No, I'm not. I'm not cross and boring at all. I was complimenting your dress because it reminds me of my favorite store in New York, Evolution.
Evolution. Where they sell all the dead things.
Taxidermy and fossils.
No, we've never been
stuff.
To Necromance here in L.A. Isn't it the same thing?
It's a lower scale. It's in Hollywood on like Sunset or Melrose, one of those.
And Goldbug is nice too.
Yes, Goldbug is nice. But Necromance only has smaller of the taxidermied and dead animals.
Do they have tarantulas? Because Halloween Town has $40. There's this place in Burbank called Halloween Town that we love to go to. Actually, we kind of own half of it. We've got our Halloween decorations up, and Emily said, oh, good, this gives me permission to put up mine. But they have frames about this big, and I'm holding up something that's almost quite a 10 inches to a foot wide, I would say, and they're little squares, but there's tarantulas in them, dead tarantulas, and they fill up the whole frame. They're huge. Huge, like banana spiders. What?
Jeez.
Huge dinner plate bugs. And I keep thinking about bringing one home, like buying it. And then I'm like, mm-mm-mm. And I don't know what it is. Like, I would love to. I love knowing that they're out there.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like I should own one. But I can't imagine I would ever not look at it and see it moving out of the corner of my eye.
Yeah. What, a bug framed in her glass?
A dinner plate sized tarantula in a frame. I can't imagine I would ever not think that thing was going to get me.
Yeah, yeah.
They have one between, plates so that it wouldn't move.
Still.
They also have other things. Like, I bought my business card holder from there.
Want.
Yeah.
Want.
It's
a little Ouija board.
Oh, I know what it is. Yeah. Oh, you're telling them. Because they can't see it. Oh.
That's right.
Yes. Want. I just bought a phone case that was a Ouija board, and it looked terrible, so I gave it to a kid.
Oh.
Didn't you just buy a tray that's a Ouija board?
Yeah, but it's not here yet.
Oh.
I got a big serving tray for Halloween. So you better be working on your costumes.
Yeah, we are.
All right.
Yeah.
So we're having it catered. Do you want to tell everybody the menu so they can come and get excited about coming?
Yeah, I don't know. If everybody out there in listening land can make it over. But
Well, we're not going to give our address. If you have our address, then you're invited. And if you don't, then stay home.
Yes, that's right. We're having a caterer do it this year because we just got sick and tired of hosting parties. We finally said
enough. No, we love hosting parties. We just don't like working through them.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I got to start.
Last year, you were pretty much busy the entire time just cooking, right?
You know, which is nice for me because I'm kind of shy. Like, you would never guess it, but being in a group of people, I always need what Renee calls an excuse to say excuse me.
Right.
Which is, oh, excuse me, just one second. It's safe for me to, like, flit in like a little hummingbird and conversation, and then, woo, I have something to do, excuse me. Mm. And it gives me an excuse. And that's, like, for a shy person, it's a relief to me, which makes me love hosting parties at my house because there's always a reason to run away. And we never have people in our house that we don't want here or don't want to talk to. Mm-hmm. So it's not because I don't like them, but it's just like after a while, I feel like my energy is being pulled in 80 different directions at a party. And one of those things was always the food. Yeah. So we're kind of taking that away. So I'm like, oh, am I going to have to sit down at my own party? I kind of don't want to do that. Like, I love running around. Still got
trick-or-treaters to make excuses to go visit. And
you know what? We actually want to get somebody to do the door. You know, like, I almost want to hire someone to answer the door and to work outside with the mallet.
Mm-hmm. All right, I'll get to work on it.
Yeah. So, you know, but it's hard because anyone who comes to the party is going to want to be at the party. And so it's sort of like, well, where do I pull
talent from? We can get Gummy Joe in.
Who the hell is that?
It's a guy who's over, you know, at the watershed area.
You've already lost me. No, we're done. Gummy Joe, you know Gummy Joe. No, we're done.
Mr. Squeegee, you know.
We are done.
Okay, all right. Sorry, Gummy. You're not doing it this year.
He doesn't have technology. Oh, God. There's the Gummy Joe voice.
Gummy Joe, yeah.
You know what? Come as Gummy Joe, and I'll let you answer the door.
There okay, go. Thank you.
You need a squeegee on your back, kid?
I'll do the whole night for a roll of toilet paper and a plate of Gummy Vittles to take with me.
And a shower and a shave and a shit.
Well, Gummy Joe, you'll have to go to the horse wash out back.
Oh, luxury. Okay.
Warm water? Yeah. Warm, clean water? Hey.
Can I bum some of that palm oil dishwashing liquid? No, I don't want to push it. That's okay.
Sure, you can have a squirt.
Oh, glory be.
Luxury.
Sure, you can have a squirt.
Oh, glory be.
Luxury.
Luxury. Don't have to bathe now till Easter.
Well, I think we should log off with that.
What? I think so. Anything more you want? Oh, you know, we went to the theater a couple times last week.
Oh?
Yeah.
Yeah, we saw Book of Mormon twice on accident.
Well, we didn't see it once.
I still haven't seen it. I really want to. Is it?
I think I'm the only person in the world who didn't like it. He loved it. Everyone I know who saw it loved it. I thought it was fine. But a lot of the humor I felt came from broad characters and kind of making fun of Broadway. Yeah. And so it's like, well, oh, there's Lion King. Here's this, here's that.
I saw that clip where he's singing with like the terrorists, pirates from Uganda or whatever. And he's like being over, and the guy's just staring at him going, what's going on? And he's being led around. And that was funny because, he was in a weird situation.
Right. And so, and it's not like for me, I always do that stuff on stage. Like I'm so, and my personality every day is so over the top and crazy busy that I was just like, okay, okay. You know, okay, okay. There was one moment in it though that made me laugh. Actually, I didn't laugh. I nodded and said, yes, that was funny. Which is what I do now. I don't really like it.
You have
rare.
Me. Yes.
That was very good. That was very good. They do a funny little scene, and here's a spoiler alert. So, but they do a scene where they're clapping and the lights go off and the lights come on and the lights go off again and the lights come back on and they're all wearing sparkly vests. And it happens so fast. Yeah. It was ridiculous. And it was so silly and it was so over the top. And the whole song is called like, turn it off like a light switch. Uh-huh. When you have gay feelings. And so they turn it off and they clap their hands
or any
and they
feelings.
Turn it on and they're in pink sparkly vests and all the Mormon men are like, ah, you know, it was ridiculous. And I was like, okay, that was funny. It was magical. Yes. And I just thought, I'm gonna steal that.
Yeah.
I'm gonna steal that for something. I don't know what, but it's in my
I don't know how they got those pink sparkly vests there, but that was a good illusion.
So funny. So nice. Funny. So yeah, so we saw Book of Mormon.
And we saw Steve Martin.
So nice. Funny. So, yeah, so we saw Book of Mormon.
And we saw Steve Martin the week before that.
Oh, yeah.
That must have been amazing.
That was awesome.
Portland and Ben were there.
Oh, yeah?
Mm-hmm. I was telling him we saw someone we knew there.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And Seth Green was there, too.
Who we did not see there, but you did.
Yeah. And
ever since he started performing the banjo, I've been dying to see him.
He's spectacular. Yeah. Steve Martin? If I had known, I'd have got you a ticket.
Oh, I would have died and gone to heaven.
Oh, next time he's around, I'll let you know, and you can get your own ticket.
Yes.
But I will definitely watch for that.
Yeah. Yeah. It was quite extraordinary. I thought it was terrific.
He is amazing. And yeah. You know, that was a better show. I would rather watch that show than watch him do stand-up, I think.
He did do stand-up.
He did in between his songs.
Of course.
Yeah, but it was for me, perfect.
Yes.
Because he was very funny. Mm-hmm. He was very, he meant everything that he was saying. He would give 1, 2, 3 sentences tops between songs, and then you'd have 2 minutes of no one talking and just music playing. And it was mm-hmm. really great combination. It was a hell of a show.
And it was
a standing ovation. I mean, he was really good.
And it was like he was playing his old stand-up persona, which is, you know, kind of the, hey, worldly showbiz guy, Steve, hey, here I am.
Just saying it's comedy is stuck in between the music, but that's what his old routine was, music stuck in between the comedy.
That's right.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah. And he would go into a breakdown, you know, of a banjo piece, and then you come back, do more comedy, do, you know, some prop comedy and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And this one, it's more like he's playing, and then he does that persona, the kind of, like, hey, Mr. Showbiz type, you know, that variation on the stand-up guy that he does.
And now, Foggy Mountain Breakdown.
But I've seen him do Q&As where he does not lapse into that character. It's subtle, mm-hmm. you know, but he's just where he's just on and he's funny. Like a couple of years ago when he interviewed Tina Fey, he was...
I didn't see that. You and Alan went to that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. he was very funny, but he was not... You know, being, hey, it's Steve, the entertainer.
He's not like Robin Williams where there's just an on switch. He seems to like have facets of his ability. And like he can be the writer, he can be the comedian, he can be the musician. Mm-hmm. And I'm just fascinated by what a renaissance man he is in that aspect.
He's really talented.
Yeah, I've seen him 3 times live. And the first time he did Magic. The second time he did the evening with Tina Fey. And then the third time he did the banjo. I never saw him do his... classic stand-up routine from like the late 70s, although you know, I feel like I have because I watched him so many times on tape and I played the albums obsessively, you know, just
all those Johnny Carson appearances.
Yeah,
those were some amazing, like he always did a new routine every time he went on, like Fly Dini.
Yes. Oh, that was magic. The magic trick.
That's
I saw
ridiculous. I mean, that's really the epitome, and that's one of the things that I think is great about certain magicians is they pick this thing up and they go, okay, so here's this magic trick. Here's this thing that all magicians know what it is. Mm-hmm. What else can I do with it? Like, there's a woman who does, she's not even a magician, I don't think. Her name's Ursula something. And she does this vanishing handkerchief. And it vanishes and reappears. And she takes her, you know, it's like, okay, well, it's probably up her sleeve. And she goes, oh, it's not up my sleeve. She takes her jacket off. Then she takes her top off. And it still appears from her bra. So she takes her bra off.
Oh, man.
And then it appears from the top of her pants. So she takes her pants off. She is fully nude, shows her hands completely empty, and produces that handkerchief from inside of her. Now, I know how she did it. It's a very common magician's convention. All magicians who watch that go, oh my God. But she took it to the extreme and kept going. What can I do with this thing? Like, what if? And asking the question, what if? And that's what the Fly Dini, that's why I'm such a big fan of it. It's here's this conventional magic prop.
Yeah.
And I'm going to take a minute and just play with it. And this is what happens when you play with something. It becomes something no one's seen before. Because you start evaluating stuff and you go, oh my God, well, what if I did this with it? What if I did that with it? Like, I just bought a contraption that magicians use to make smoke appear from their hands. It's like, and this like little cloud of smoke appears. And I thought, what if Princess Magic put a cigarette behind her ear and her hair caught fire? Like, what if that happened? And so I'm going to try to rig it so that happens. And if it doesn't work, then I still have this thing that I can, you know, or sell it, you know, because it was like $80, you know, but it's taking that. And I'm not using that because I'm a genius and this is like Fly Dini stuff. I'm just saying this is what I did. And it's a principle that I'm trying to incorporate into my own career, life, and ideas.
Right.
And you do that all the time. It's like, what if Batman had a friend? And, you know, how would I feel if I was Batman's friend? Probably jealous. And when they gave you Hush, you really thought about what would it be like to be next in line to friggin' Bruce Wayne? How do you compare? You don't. And Hush tried to become him. Yeah. Well, that comes from going, well, what if? What if there was this kid that he grew up with and was really close with? And what if? You know?
Yeah, it's all like that. You know, you kind of take these established conventions and... At least with characters, you don't try and repeat, you know, stories that have like the stories you think you should do, or, you know, try and imitate what somebody else is doing. You just have to look at the character as the character and say, what hasn't been done with this character quite the same way, but what makes sense emotionally for what makes sense for this character to go to a unique emotional place, and what will they do once they're there? And that's the charm of working on some of these characters that have been around for, I don't know, 50, 60, 70 years.
Yeah. Well, and you've also, but in addition to all of that, you also avoid getting a super personal connection to it. You know, like you've always likened it, and I think we've said this before on the podcast, to playing with another kid's toys in the sandbox. I don't own Batman, and I don't have any designs on owning him, because I never will. He belongs to Warner Brothers in DC, and I like to play with him, and I'm really glad when that kid lets me play with his toys. But when I'm not playing with him, he's not mine. Mm-hmm. And you're very good about keeping that, you know, even though people are like, oh, you write Batman so well, it's like, because I like him. Well, you know, don't you get mad when they do this with Batman? No. Like, don't you get mad when they do this with Harley Quinn? She's not my toy anymore. I gave her to Warner Brothers, so that's their toy now.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And if they want to light fire to her and stab her head with pins, not that that's what they're doing, but, you know, like, if they want to do that, it's their toy to do that with.
Yeah. You can't, know? when you're playing with someone else's toys, you can't get possessive about them, because I've seen people have said, well, that's not my version of such and such a character, or
right.
I would never do that with such and such. And
but when they stop doing crazy things with such and such, then creativity stops, because sometimes, you know, someone might have looked at your, you know, and said, oh, Paul Dini's doing this with Hush, and then they read it and went, oh my God, wow, that's really cool. And then that idea, you know, sets seed, and it something else grows from that. Now all of a sudden this is a super awesome three-dimensional character that everybody can sink their teeth into, and now it's one of the regular rogues gallery, which is what happened with Harley. Because you continued to develop her, and you really let yourself fall in love with her. And now she's part of the rogues gallery. He was so excited. Here in L.A., when you drive up Barham to Cahuenga, there's a place called the Cahuenga Pass, and to get from our house to Hollywood, you have to drive up this pass, and Warner Brothers Animation has a big display that they've painted on the wall in Bruce Timm style, a lot of it, not all of it, but a lot of it, and they've got a lot of the iconic Warner Brothers Animation and DC Comics characters.
Yeah.
Friggin' Harley Quinn. There's a villains gallery. During the day, the heroes are there. And at night, they project the villains on the bottom.
Oh, yeah. So it's Joker, Harley, Clayface,
Catwoman.
I think Two-Face is up there.
Yeah. And there's only five.
Yeah.
One of them's his.
Yeah.
And I said to him, how does that feel? And he said, pretty damn good, I got to say.
Yeah, that's
pretty
fun.
Pretty good. He didn't design her. They didn't ask him if they could put her up there. They didn't, because it's not his toy. Mm-hmm. But it's pretty cool to know that he put his thumbprint on pop culture like that.
Yeah. Oh,
like,
yeah.
So deeply. And left such a deep impression with his little thumb.
It was her birthday last week.
I didn't know she had a birthday.
Harley's birthday. Her official birthday is, I hate to say it, September 11th. But
that's appropriate.
That was the day the very first Harley cartoon premiered.
Oh, so that's what you count it as?
Yeah.
Okay.
So that she first appeared in Joker's favor 20 years ago. And a rather portentous day, as it turns out.
Well.
And I posted a little clip from one of the cartoons on my Twitter, and then I got so many responses from people, you know, thanking me and Bruce, and, oh, what a great character, and when are you going to do her again, and when are we going to see more, and... Oh, I named my cat after Harley Quinn, you know, or whatever, you know, it's nice to know that you had a hand in creating something like that. It just makes me more determined to do more stuff like that.
I worked with somebody at my job at NBC, and they'd never read a comic in their life. They didn't really watch cartoons or anything. But one day they found a comic of Harley Quinn, and they thought she was the coolest character they've ever seen. They went as her for Halloween that year, and they were just hooked.
Cool.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, we got all those catalogs that showed up today that all had different Harley Quinn costumes in them.
Nice.
That one design was awful, but the other one is cool.
Yeah. Maybe I should go as Harley Quinn for...
You've been depicted as Harley Quinn in how many cartoons?
I don't know. They keep drawing me as Harley
Quinn. Just go as yourself as Harley from that cartoon.
Well, that's what he... Yeah.
Yeah, just without the domino mask, just grumbly in the
Ringling Brothers doesn't have a tent big enough for me.
I will not let you talk about Paul Dini like that.
Okay, I'm kidding.
I don't like it.
No, okay. All right. No. I'll find something appropriate, but I feel like that everybody got their laugh on the shows. There's no real reason to see that in real life. But I will come up with something, I'm sure, suitable in the 6 weeks we have till Halloween.
Yeah, we got to figure out what we're going to be for Halloween. Hmm. I was a cockroach 1 year.
Yeah.
And then I was Hester Prynne, much to his dismay.
I was a Scotsman.
You were a Scotsman 1 year. You were. You always buy those expensive, beastly Zagoni costumes and never put them on because Muggsy attacks you.
Well, he did. He attacked me.
He's like, well, I can't wear the cloven hooves because Muggsy doesn't like them.
Well, maybe I'll look and see what they have now and see if they have anything interesting for this year.
I just love it because he puts it on and Muggsy's like, what's that thing that ate my father? I smell him in there. And he starts pulling at the pants trying to get it off of him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll come up with something good. We have time. But we don't have time right now because we're out of time.
Yeah, finally.
Yeah.
Sure. We've Everyone who listens to this podcast is like, good. I'm glad they're out of time.
Oh, God. They're back on the air. Anyway. Well, we'll say goodbye for this week.
Yes, goodbye for this week.
And we will see you next week. Bye.
This has been another episode of Radio Rashi. If you've enjoyed this episode, let everyone know by leaving a review in the iTunes store. It's a great way to help others find us. You can also leave comments on RadioRashi.com, Facebook.com/RadioRashi, or follow us on Twitter at Radio Rashi or at Paul_Dini to leave us questions. Thanks for listening, and tell your friends.